Good morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Jennifer Lewis, and I've been a member here at First Unitarian Church since October. In the pulpit this morning, we are very pleased to have Michelle Bryant Barbeau with us. A quick announcement, if there are any children in the chapel with us today, they are doing children's chapel in Emerson Place. There isn't a children's moment here or anything, so if you'd like to join the children, please do so. You are invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you are a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at church. If you'd like to learn more about the church or about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall, where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you're certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. To draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. We hope you'll keep these things in mind as you plan your upcoming week. I also have an announcement. Last week, a cup of coffee was spilled on one of the pew cushions. Mary Johnson tried to take it to the dry cleaners and get it removed. Unfortunately, the stain was unable to be cleaned. So if you bring something to drink with you to church, please make sure that you have a lid on it here in the sanctuary, or as they said in the first service, even better, maybe not bring things to drink. Any other announcements for the good of the church?
Okay. Drum circle after church today. If you didn't bring a drum or a musical instrument or a drum ally, such as an oatmeal box, or yogurt container. We've got lots of stuff on hand for you to use. You can always just use your hands. So, second announcement is, you notice the luau stuff. Newcomer luau for one for all. You don't have to be a newcomer. You can be an oldcomer or anything. Come to luau this coming Saturday, the 10th, at 7 o'clock. Brenda gave me the holy lay to wear. So, third announcement is we're all stewards of this church. We all have gifts that we give to our congregation. We are looking for a few more. We've got a lot of visiting stewards, but we're looking for a few more visiting stewards who would be willing to go to our fellow congregants and to be with them as their visiting stewards. So, we've got a big training coming this next Sunday, and what's exciting about that is that our amazing capital campaign consultant, is also going to be consulting for our stewardship campaign, and is doing a training for us. So we scored the big one there with that one. So please come. Please talk to myself or Marty, my wife. Marty, stand up just in case. You don't know Marty. Please consider being a visiting steward. Because we've got a lot already, and you know, many hands make light work, looks like our visiting stewards will only be having 4 conversations this year. So very easy stuff, and we hope you'll consider it.
This coming Saturday morning at 9 a.m. at the Holiday Inn in Alton, the Women's History Coalition will have their annual brunch. And Anna Dees has been a member of this coalition for a while, and we're inviting any of you from the church that would like to attend that brunch, which is usually very interesting. They always have some kind of interesting speaker or entertainment. And that brunch will be $13. If you are interested in going, I need your $13 today so that I can obtain the ticket for you. So I hope that you will come. That's Saturday morning, 9 a.m., Holiday Inn in Alton.
Hi. We have a really good problem to have that we I take care of the personal care items that get distributed every fourth Saturday with a fourth Saturday lunch. And we don't have enough bins, big plastic bins, because you know, we have a lot of donated items, clothing and shoes and other things. And so I was looking for a bin to put the toiletry items, and I found one finally, but there's no sign. It's under the table in the worker room. I'll put a sign on it, I promise. I'll get my act together. I'll also put a sign with what needs to be offered, but if you have plastic bins that you don't use, or crates, like milk crates, those are good. We have a storage in Emerson Place, but just to put them out here so that people see where to donate. Thank you so much for your generosity. It's been amazing. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Sarah Johnson, and we are having our second Camp Fest or Camp Ministries meeting today following service. If you're interested in camping with the congregation and getting in on the ground floor of planning our camping activities, please join us. We have two camping events scheduled. The first one will be the third Sunday in April, probably. Hopefully, we're going to vote for sure on it at Bergfried. And our big Camp Fest will be June 1st through the 4th at Pere Marquette State Park at the Camp Piazzal Group Camping. You will soon be inundated with lots of information about this camping event. If you'd like to learn more or get involved, please join us after second service right out here by the fireplace.
Hi, I'm Diane Thompson. Two announcements. We have been talking about working to help build a house in East St. Louis for a low-income family. We were hoping to get a date on a Saturday. We can't get a Saturday, but we're going to do 2 days in May. It's a Monday and a Tuesday, May 21st, May 22nd. I'm hoping that since that's so far out, that those of you who want to come and help will be able to arrange your schedule so that you can. Please see me and let me know if you're interested in doing that. We only have about four more volunteer slots. So if you want to help, the slots are going fast. If you want to help, but you are scared of hammers because one bit you once when you were a small child, Bob Chapman's holding up his hand. He's apparently scared of hammers, but I don't believe him. If he is, he copes with it very, very well. The other thing they ask is that they ask that we provide food for the volunteers, ourselves, and about 10 other people who are sort of coordinating the whole build. Sandy Shaner has already signed up to help bring the food on the 22nd of May, but it'd be great if somebody who was scared of hammers but wanted to be involved would sign up to bring the food, coordinate the food on the 21st of May. That's announcement number one. Please see me and let me know so that if you've got a lot of interest, I'll try to get everybody in. If you want to come for 1 day, that's great. If you want to come for 2 days, that's even better, however it works. The other announcement is that our work supporting homeowners who are in foreclosure is continuing and ongoing, and we have a second follow-up training to the first training that we did. It's going to happen next Saturday right in that room behind me on March 10th from 3 to 6. Please let me know if you're interested in coming so that I'll make sure to have enough copies of materials. We ran out of copies of materials at the last training. And also, if you didn't come to the first training but you're still interested, that's fine, but I need to know so that I can get you copies of the materials from the first training. Thanks.
And now I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any joys, milestones, or concerns you may bring with you to church this morning.
Hi, I'm Jerry Johnson. I had a milestone yesterday. I turned 70. And and I wanted to thank everybody who sent wishes and that. We brought the remains of my birthday cake. There may still be some pieces left. If you didn't get an earlier piece, try to line up and get one out on the buffet table in the workroom.
So I have a joy about, I don't know, a month, maybe a little more ago, I mentioned that my husband's 90-some-year-old grandmother had fallen and broken her hip. And her name was Phyllis Reiheld. And she's awesome. She's doing really extremely well, like better than 70-year-olds who break their hips. So that's good news. And then another joy, some of you know I'm a professor in the Department of Philosophy at SIUE. I organize a series called Medicine in Action on Medical Ethics, which is open to the public. The next section is Friday, March 16th. So I can announce this again next week. And it's on moral distress, which is what happens when healthcare providers know the right thing to do, but can't do it because of things about the situation that make it impossible. So anyone who's interested in that is welcome. You can also contact me for details.
Shorter people. Maybe I should be shorter.
You know? You're fine.
Yeah, I have been absent for the past couple weeks to help my dad, but I just wanted to say that maybe a lot of us are really upset and very concerned about what's going on in Syria these days, especially Homs, H-O-M-S, I don't know how to pronounce that. But anyway, maybe with Dr. Glossop or others, we can brainstorm on something we can do. You know, I think we give in to sort of a fatalistic attitude that, well, you know, that's just too much for us to even be concerned about. But anyway, I would love to hear any thoughts that you have on that.
Eric Johnson again. I have a great joy. 10 years ago, this evening, actually, my youngest daughter, Lauren, was born. And so if you see my younger one, wish her a happy 10th birthday.
One other thing to share. Jennifer Timpey's cousin, Claire, as some of you are aware, passed away Wednesday morning, unfortunately. She would like to extend her thank you to everyone for their continued thoughts and prayers. And now the prelude begins our worship service as Bob Chapman lights our chalice. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Let us worship together. Our first hymn will be number 1023 in the Teal Hymnal, entitled Building Bridges. And we will sing this through twice. Please rise up as you are able.
Reach out to you. Will you reach out to me?
join in responsive reading number 666, found in the back of your hymnal. It is entitled The Legacy of Caring and is from Thundeika. Despair is my private pain, born from what I have failed to say, failed to do, failed to overcome.
Be still my inner self. Let me rise to you. Let me reach down into your pain and soothe you.
I turn to you to renew my life. I turn to the world, the streets of the city, the worn tapestries of brokerage firms.
Drug dealers, private estates, personal things in the bad lady's cart.
Rage and pain in the faces that turn from me, afraid of their own inner worlds.
This common world I love anew, as the lifeblood of generations who refuse to surrender their humanity in an inhumane world, courses through my veins.
From within this world, my despair is transformed to hope.
And I begin anew the legacy of
seated. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. The morning's offering will now be given and received.
I have two readings for today's sermon. Hi, by the way, I'm Michelle. Have we met? There we go. So to spare others from these readings, because some of them can be challenging, I'll start with the first one. The first one is a snippet from the website of United Congregations of Metro East, which is UCM. We are part of this affiliation. It is interfaith and multiracial, and we do good works with these folks. Here's some of the things off of their website from the success stories. The UCM Alton Area Cluster was formed in 2007 and works primarily on two local issues, caring for creation and racial reconciliation. In an effort to bring people of different cultures together in the community, the cluster is committed to participating in activities and building up mutual understanding and affection by praying together, playing together, and working together. The Alton Cluster has sponsored a series of conversations to encourage greater understanding among people of various races and socioeconomic groups. In O'Fallon, UCM was a sponsor for the first citywide Interfaith Martin Luther King Birthday Breakfast. The second reading that I have for you today comes from the source of inspiration for this particular sermon. It is also by Reverend Dr. Tandeyaka. And it's an excerpt from her essay, Why Anti-Racism Will Fail. I should mention that this is in critique to the Unitarian Universalist Association's program of anti-racism. She didn't particularly care for the way it was built. Part of this involves taking some workshops to receive some training, and so we'll start her excerpt from there. I took one of these workshops and read the accompanying material. As a result of these experiences, I learned three things. One, all whites in America are racists. Two, no blacks in America are racist. They're prejudiced, just like everybody else, but they lack the power of institutional resources to make other racial groups submit to their will. Therefore, they can't be racist because racism in this conceptual scheme equals power and prejudice. And three, whites must be shown that they are racist and confess their racism. Now you see why she didn't particularly care for it. Based on my experience of the training and of my work with some of the anti-racism advocates of the UUA on the Racial and Cultural Diversity Task Force, I concluded that the anti-racist strategies have three basic problems. One, they violate the first principle of our UU covenant together to actively affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of all individuals. Two, they make the erroneous assumption about the nature and structure of power in America. And three, they misinterpret actions resulting from feelings of shame and powerlessness as evidence of white racism. On that note, we need prayer and meditation, or at least I do. So please join me. To the vastness that is referenced by so many names, the birthright that we share, I call to the access to the still place where the individual and the all meet. The weight of our own knowing can become companions with all those who have come before, so we can move forward with open hearts filled with wisdom. We remember those whose hearts are heavy, bellies are empty, and souls are bogged down. We can know in sacred community that there is room for you as you are today. We offer the silence, our own prayers and meditation, each in our own way. Those that were spoken aloud or held in our hearts. We raise our joint joys and concerns to the care of all helpers of humankind. Let's remain seated, and if you would like, join me with hymn number 123, Spirit of Life in Your Gray Hymnal.
Thank you.
this morning, I was certainly asking the spirit of life to come to me. I got up trying to maintain a zen-like peace while the coffee percolated forever. So I was looking outside, obviously being nervous about the sermon, because this is a difficult topic. We're going to talk about race and racism. But I got to thinking, there's a reason for conversation. One of my previous jobs, I worked in a factory that did production. And a lot of the people that worked out on the actual production floor were usually first-generation Mexican-Americans, spoke little to no English. We're talking within 100 words of vocabulary. It's amazing and brave. So one of my coworkers, I'd worked with her for years at this point, 2 or 3 years. We spoke and saw each other several times a day. But one day, I was a little too busy to try to figure out how to mime what we needed from each other. So I forgot that I'm scared, and I spoke Spanish. So I spoke my little broken Spanish to her, and her eyes lit up. And not only did I get exactly what I needed, she got exactly what I needed, but I learned that she had a personality. She was funny, really, really funny. I've known her for years. I didn't know that. So perhaps language can really open up a whole different conversation. So maybe we should have this discussion. Ready? Now, this is a unique sermon because it's actually a collaborative effort between Eric Johnson and myself. He was the one that gave us the idea and the theme behind this and a lot of the supporting material. So when we are talking about race and racial diversity in religious communities, it's tough. It's also been said that Sunday morning is the most segregated hour of the whole day. Blacks go to black churches, whites go to white churches, and no, never shall they meet. Except for here, right? We should also note that our Unitarian Universalist faith is still predominantly white. Oh. So how do we feel about that? And a better question, how do we even engage the topic of race and racism? Squirming is okay. So in 1997, the UUA, which is the Unitarian Universalist Association, came out with the Journey Toward Wholeness, an anti-racism initiative as an attempt to address racism within our own religious body. As part of that rollout program, the UUA sent a trained facilitator to Meadville Lombard Theological School, our own UU seminary in Chicago, Illinois. And this person was to teach the program. I should also mention, it was Eric Johnson's first year of seminary, and he witnessed what followed. The facilitator was prepared to show the students the path that they must walk to anti-racism. However, he was not prepared in the least to answer the pointed and frankly hostile questions of the faculty. Several older white professors were disturbed by several aspects of the program, its accuracy, its implications. But to the student's eyes, this only served to prove the point. The facilitator had been explaining that the focus of most of our justice work, UUs that is on the victims of racism and not the oppressors that benefit from racism. Perhaps we need to put greater focus on the power and privilege that white people have in our racist society. The main thrust of this program was addressing power and privilege. It also heaped shame upon the beneficiaries of white oppression. The heated grumblings of the white professors had only served to support the journey towards wholeness argument. However, this whole time, one person had been silent, someone frequently deemed as UU's greatest living theologian. theologian, the Reverend Dr. Thundayaka, a black woman. Let me give a little background on her. This comes from a slightly paraphrased version of Meadville Lombard's website. In addition to teaching at Meadville Lombard Theological School, Thundayaka is the president of the Center for Community Values and an affiliated minister with Unitarian Universalist Church of Rockford, Illinois. She's the author of The Embodied Self, Friedrich Schleiermacher's Solution to Kant's Problem of the Empirical Self, and Learning to be White, Race, Money, and God in America. I intend to devour the contents of that book. I would love to chat with you about it. Her current research focuses on the nature, structure, and meaning of human affection and empathy in religious communities. Thundayaka's approach is interdisciplinary, drawing on historical theology, contemporary self-psychology, race, class theories, and gender and cultural studies. She's taught in various places, like San Francisco State University, Williams College, has been a fellow at Stanford Humanities Center at Stanford University, and a visiting scholar at Union Theological Seminary in New York City. I'm not done. Before receiving her doctorate in philosophy of religion and theology from Claremont Graduate School, Thundayaka was an Emmy Award-winning producer. An ordained UU minister and theologian, she was given the Xhosa name Thundayaka, which means one who is beloved by God. She received this name from Catholic Bishop Desmond Tutu in 1984. That person also won the Nobel Peace Prize that same year. So, this is who we're talking with. So back to the incident. What the students didn't know at the time was that Thundayaka had received the program ahead of time and had prepared some remarks in advance. After hearing the concerns of the other professors, she rose and spoke in a voice that Eric describes to me as both soft and kind. You know, you can't find her on the internet. I used all of my power of Googling. It's interesting, so she's very private. The one YouTube video that I did find, or somewhere I found, was someone else introducing her to give a sermon, but not the sermon itself. Interesting. So after she stood and began to speak in her soft, kind voice, what followed was an evisceration of the arguments presented in the program. With surgical precision and blinding brilliance, she challenged the presenter, and in short order, the facilitator left in a huff, unable to respond to her arguments. 2 years later, Thundayaka delivered a lecture entitled, Why Anti-Racism Will Fail, at the annual UUA General Assembly, which concisely presented her argument. Now that reading is starting to make a little more sense. We will have a few copies for your viewing in the worker room, and I would love to continue discussing it. As well as, I believe Eric has a copy of his signed book, Learning to be White, which was published just before the GA lecture. Please know that Thundayaka is not distancing herself from the UUA, because our denomination does many wonderful things, and she is committed to it. In fact, she opens her comments about this difficult topic to the General Assembly by saying, I accepted this invitation knowing I would have to speak out against an official UUA program, something I do with great reluctance. But otherwise, my own work might be mistranslated here at GA into yet another talk about white racism. As I hope to show, such racial talk is counterproductive to social justice mission that we have in our denomination. So the issue that she had with the program was threefold. Violated our first principles, which is to actively affirm and promote the inherent worth of individuals. Second, makes a false assumption about the nature and power structure in America. And third, misrepresenting the actions of results of shame as evidence of white racism. So let's take it back. Number one, violating the first principle. Our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every individual, is an unabashed rejection of the Christian doctrine of original sin drink that in. I had to. This doctrine states that humanity is inherently flawed and sinful, thus necessitating a savior to atone. So in order to say that all whites are inherently racist is to advocate a similar doctrine, and it denies our ability to save ourselves. Second objection. The mistaken assumption about the nature and structure of power in America. I'd like to take a direct quote from her essay on this one. To answer the question, we have to turn to the second problem I have found in the UU anti-racist strategies, the errant assumption that white America works for white Americans. Anyone who cares to look will quickly discover that it doesn't, at least not for the vast majority of them. The privilege that, according to the anti-racists, comes from membership in white America actually belongs to a tiny elite. That point has been getting a lot of press these days in the Occupy movement, the 1% versus the 99%, and the unequal distribution of wealth and power that subverts our democracy. Perhaps she called this one. But where she takes it is even further. For her, the disparity of this may lead to tremendous shame, and it might actually be the underpinnings for all racism. What would happen if white America doesn't play by the rules of systemic racism? Would they lose their white privilege card? Haven't they? Us? Hasn't anyone who's spoken out lost the support that comes with the system? It's interesting. The third objection is a little dense, so I'm going to try to break it down. I'm really paraphrasing this. Please look into the essay and definitely in her book and talk to me about it afterwards. The third one, which was misrepresenting actions resulting from feelings of shame and powerlessness as evidence of white racism. This is blending self-psychology and economics and history. The core of this theory lies that there could be two responses for feeling powerless and helpless: lashing out at others and lashing in at self. Lashing out, sometimes this results in making a scapegoat out of someone or a group of people. To lash out is to ease some of the feeling of powerlessness that would otherwise turn inward in shame. After all, if you had the power to strike out at what was making you feel helpless, you wouldn't have that feeling in the first place. But perhaps we also lash in at ourselves. And this is what Thandeka is pointing out, saying that the majority of our congregants are racist because of the color of their skin. We are denying their own dignity and worth. Perhaps we've created this as something to afflict ourselves with, to punish ourselves and soothe the pain of our helpless nature. When have you not said something when there is a larger group acting differently? So in an attempt to discuss these, where does that leave us? Our own denomination is still trying to figure it out. And as always, the power is in the pews in this location and throughout our denomination. So we've got to figure it out, individual by individual, heart by heart. The good news is, Thandeka gave us some suggestions about how to proceed. First, in good old UU fashion, read. Start reading groups in your local congregations that will help you figure out how to talk sensibly about the link between race and class in America. Learn how the creation of this so-called white in this country was a means to exploit this person's labor. Discover what white Americans have in common with other people of color, and work on language that takes into account the fact that this racial socialization process in this country makes racial victims of us all. I would like to rewind one more time. There's a section of this sentence. Discover what white Americans have in common with other people of color. The reason why this is important is when I was younger, not that much younger, I can tell you. I used to feel sorry for white people. They didn't have any culture, no heritage. They couldn't fist pump the air and proclaim their whiteness. That wasn't PC. Poor things, what did they have left? And then I met my first Irish Catholic. Oh, perhaps that's culture. Then, even better, that same Irish Catholic became a lapsed Catholic, and it was still part of her cultural identity. Perhaps you too have culture. Do not allow yourself to be whitewashed into thinking you don't. You have traditions and culture and things that you've been brought up with, things you've inherited, things you are doing today that will translate into culture for tomorrow. Second of Thandayika's offerings, empathize. Learn to replace moral judgment with loving compassion. All of us have made decisions and acted in ways that compromise our moral integrity. Use our collective power as a religious movement to help each other heal our crippled ability to relate to our full integrity of our humanity. Create new rituals in your Sunday services, not unlike this one, to allow persons to feel the healing power of beloved community. The first time I came face to face with a friend and I had to say to her, because it was bubbling up in me, I'm sorry, I thought you were just white. I didn't know that your family does Christmas the same way every day, or your Italian grandmother makes a certain dish this exact way that has passed from her to the next generation, to the next generation. I didn't know. I lessened you by not seeing it. And I apologize. Colorblind's a buzzword for me. It's a good idea. But I think it's missing something. I am African American. I am a card-carrying black girl. Thank you. I think my skin color is pretty cool. I think my culture is pretty cool. I think that the cadences and dialect that shows up in my voice when I'm around friends is pretty neat. And it influences jazz and soul and gospel. It's in me. Don't miss that. My hair is pretty cool. It grows just like this. Don't miss that. Don't be colorblind to that. And I won't be blind to you. So I'm going to try to forgive myself for all the times that I am, because I'm blind to a lot of things. I don't know if you are. But I'm going to try to see you better. And I would ask that perhaps maybe you do the same. That'll change the conversation when it comes to race and racism, is what I think. Then take a suggestion number three. Organize. Build coalitions, not unlike UCM, United Congregations of Metro East, interfaith, interracial groups. Using your new vocabulary and your new commitment to empathize with the work of other UU congregations and liberal religious groups who are tired of separating race and class in the conversation. I should mention, also in that same childhood, born of black power and black is beautiful, I also was called white by other black people because I was middle class. I didn't believe that there was a tie between racism and class until folks started trying to take my black girl card away. Are you kidding? I can't turn it off. So perhaps there is something there. Perhaps the brand of English that I speak has more to do with my class than my culture. Perhaps the schools that I attended, the fact that I can say I took a race and religion class at McKendree University, has something to do with my class and my culture. Thandayika says, I believe that we have the power to transform America because of who we are. We are Middle America. Transform this group, and you transform the country, because we are the majority. All we need is the moral courage to practice what we preach. And we will generate this moral courage through love. So may it be. I invite you to sing our final hymn, number 170 in our gray hymnal. We are a gentle, angry people. Rise up as you are able. Gentle, angry people. I have heard a litany by Margie Bowings Wheatley, a litany of restoration, as delivered by the Reverend Gerald L. Davis. He says, if, recognizing the interdependence of life, we strive to build community, our strength together is our salvation. So if you are black and I am white, it does not matter. If you are female and I am male, it does not matter. If you are older and I am younger, it does not matter. If you are progressive and I am conservative, if you are straight and I am gay, if you are Christian and I am Jewish, but if our spirits are joined as brothers and sisters, the pain of our loneliness is lessened. And that does matter. Let's go boldly. As Cleaver says, with fire in our hearts, have courage and compassion, beauty and strength. Dare to have these conversations. Blessed may it be. Let's chat about it.